ball. Cause I got a good feeling and I don't feel no pain at all. Right in my day. My day to play. Right in my day.
Hey everybody, Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. It's about 7 past the hour. Friday is our day to play, huh? It's going to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday pretty soon. Have you seen these numbers? Did you catch the news today? The biggest loss in jobs. I don't even know if I can get it out. The biggest loss in jobs. November, which lost 584,000 jobs, biggest drop in jobs in the 70-year history of the unemployment report. It goes back to 1945. This is the Bush economy. Hey, Republicans, how you doing? You love this? Do you like this? Huh? Just unbelievable. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a smartass. It's your paycheck, your savings, the value of your house that is tanking, just like everybody else's. But you're the people that put this rat bastard in office, right? You and a couple of Supreme Court justices. This is astonishing stuff. Unemployment now is up to 7.2%. Somebody told me one time, when you see those numbers from the government, always add 4 percentage points, at least, because the numbers from the government, whether it's Democratic or Republican, are always skewed to the low side. Just like the November job losses? They upgraded those. December lost 84,000 jobs. I forget what the number was in November, but when these numbers came out, they also readjusted upward an extra 140,000 tacked on to November. So if anyone remembers what November was, you see, that's where the lies that come in, just like from Big Brother. Oh, God, I hate to use that that poor, overworked book as a constant example. But the unemployment rate now, 7.2%, figure it's 11%. It's already into double digits. And if you factor in people who have just given up, it's going to be even higher than that. This is unbelievable stuff. But as Dick Cheney said in one of his exit interviews, I believe this one was with Bob Schieffer last Sunday, all of this chaos and tragedy and destruction to our economy has only occurred in the past 6 months. That's all. And it was all because those dirty, rotten, bastard poor people who lied on their applications to get their houses financed. It's their fault. Oh, and by extension, that would be Acorn. Because, you see, Acorn, way back in the 70s, used to lobby against redlining, the habit that real estate companies had in setting off sections of the various cities where they just wouldn't sell houses. Or they would if they would go in and start blockbusting. Anyone remember blockbusting? I'm sure you do. But so forget all that. Forget the legislation passed by the House and the Senate in the 90s and signed by the Republican Bill Clinton. What was the Glass-Steagall Act that was overturned, an act that was put into effect when? Back in the 30s? Thanks to Phil Graham, he led the way on that one. And, of course, Bill Clinton signed it. Bill Clinton could have vetoed it. There would not have been enough votes in the House to override his veto. But that's, you know, not what happened. So the total number of unemployed Americans has risen to 11.1 million. Add at least 5 million to that number, because the numbers from government agencies are always a bat squeeze. Plus, that number does not take into account those of our brothers and sisters who had jobs that paid $70,000 a year and are now working for $7.25 an hour. See, those people are counted as working. I can't. Underemployment, too, is at a record high. Underemployment. Those working people working part-time jobs because they can't find full-time work. That jumped by 715,000 in this latest number, up to 8 million. So if you add the 11 million unemployed, and actually call that what it is, call it 14 million. That's only adding 14 million plus the 8 million, 22 million people. Now, what is the workforce? 200 million of us? What's 22 million? A little over 10%, isn't it? Billionaire steel tycoon Wilbur Ross, in a recent interview with CNNMoney.com, said, quote, "The existing unemployment figures are greatly understated. They count as employed someone who used to have a high-paid manufacturing job and now is working at a Walmart or a Wendy's." Now, in another, I like the way CNN Money identifies him, billionaire steel tycoon. Oh, Jesus. Don't you just want to... No, I can't say that on radio. In another discouraging sign, if you haven't had enough, the average hourly work week fell last month to 33 1/3 hours. Now, we should be celebrating that. Gee, you know, it gives us more free time. That, by the way, is the lowest level in recorded history since they've been keeping track of these numbers. And even with a modest 5-cent gain in the average hourly salary, oh, it did go up. I'm not talking about minimum wage. I'm talking about the average hourly salary went up by a nickel. The average weekly paycheck fell by $2. So the average weekly paycheck now for all Americans who are working is about $600 a year, which is $600 a week, which is about $30,000 a year. God. It is unbelievable what this Bush crime family has done. Now, in the... Excuse me, I'm still dealing with the bronchitis, although it's almost over. A few more nights of throwing back Jack Black, and I'll be just fine. At his press conference today, which I did not see, but I've heard little snippets of it all day long, Barack Obama was questioned about where all the money is going to come from for the money that's going to be necessary to stimulate the economy, to get jobs going again, to reinvigorate the manufacturing sector, farming sector, everything, public works projects, everything. And, of course, Obama now, somebody has sat him down, apparently, and taken out a number two lead pencil and said, okay, look, Mr. President-to-be, you made some great statements during the campaign, and that was before we all were aware that the bottom was falling out because the lying sons of bitches on Wall Street kept it a secret, and the thug Christopher Cox, who ran the SEC, kept his incompetent mouth shut, and the Secretary of the Treasury and the head of the Federal Reserve and the head of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they also were in on the Ponzi scheme. Madoff? Forget Madoff. Madoff is a piker. Madoff stole $50 billion, maybe, lunch money. So Obama didn't know all this, and he promised education, he promised infrastructure, he promised this, he promised that, based on the fact that he didn't know. And I don't know why he didn't know this. You know it, Truth Seeker. I've known it. That the right wing, since Reagan, have been systematically eating away the foundation of this country, the financial foundation, absolutely destroying it. The public safety net, everything, slowly but surely. So there it was, teetering, 300 million of us teetering on a toothpick, and then somebody flicked it, and down it all came. So now Barack Obama is being forced to do exactly what the right wing has been planning all along. The complete destruction of an upwardly mobile society where it concerns wages and earnings and income to be replaced by a society that's stagnant. Wages can be suppressed. Unions will be disappeared. The wealthy will continue to be wealthy and get wealthier. And the rest of us can, piss off. What's that sound in the distance? Sounds like maybe the rumblings of what? Revolution? Nah, couldn't be.
I just believe, I know that it was just a dream. All the covers. Why does everything cost so much money? Could somebody please help out my family? My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs.
If jobs are the most important part of one of my jobs, how do we encourage people to hire more people?
Get your ass out of office. That's a start. Terry O'Sullivan, who is general president of the Laborers International Union of North America, said, quote, today's jobs report is conclusive evidence that it's time to put people back to work building America. He went on to say, now it's time for Congress to move to create jobs with the same urgency as they did on the $700 billion Wall Street bailout. I'm glad you mentioned it, Terry. You understand, don't you, folks, about the bailout, the $700 billion that has gone nowhere except into the pockets. That was one last act of grand theft by the Bush crime family. Tell me, truth seeker, let's see how smart you are, because I don't have an answer to this, so I'm not very smart. Where did that money go? What has it done? A more cogent question, what has it done? What is that money? I heard today that Barack Obama will have about half of that left when he takes over. Where is $350 billion? Well, you know where it is, and so do I. It's in the pockets of these filthy sons of bitches who should be, well, fill in the blank. I don't know how to relate to this stuff. I mean, it's staggering. There is a level of theft and thievery and fraud and lies and deceit going on. I mean, it's like a mad rush here at the end. The Republicans and the Bush crime family and their whores in media have ripped and raped this country until we're every one of us is staggering around bleeding out of most of our body orifices. Nobody knows what the hell to do. And these sons of bitches continue to steal and stuff their pockets. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. Any other country would have erupted by this point. And the timing, you see, to dump all this on the Democrat. And that filthy, unconscionable, drug-sucking, child-molesting pig, Rush Limbaugh, who I understand is already referring to this as the Obama recession. Oh, God, I would love to just... No, better not say that either. Now it's time for Congress to move to create jobs with the same urgency as they did on the $700 billion bailout of Wall Street. So says Terry O'Sullivan, union president. Economists are saying that job losses are going to continue to accelerate without government intervention. So, and the Republicans, these filthy sons of bitches in Congress, they know this. They know this just like CNN Money knows it and the economists know it and you and I know it, that without government stepping in. Okay? Now that takes acts of Congress. Starts in the House. That's where funding has to come from. The president proposes, Congress disposes, right? So watch what happens. I've been saying this now for 2 weeks. Watch what happens with these Republican filth. Watch how they try to squash spending bills that are desperately needed. Watch what happens. And then, I mean, that's the murderous freak show that the Republicans will put on. But the just monumental act of cowardice will be the Democrats who allow it to happen. Watch. Oh, it's sickening. Sickening. Mark Zandi, chief economist of MoodysEconomy.com. Said on Wednesday, quote, the country is losing 500,000 jobs in a month, and if the government doesn't act quickly, there's no reason that wouldn't intensify, end quote. Intensify. And what Dick Cheney say in one of his exit interviews? George Bush has no reason to apologize for anything. Certainly not the economy. Why would George Bush? Yeah. But Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke. I understand it's difficult to tell that they are goddamn thieves and bandits because they don't wear a mask and they don't carry weapons and they don't skulk around the bank foyer until the guard turns his back and then run in and say, "Everybody put your hands up!" They don't have to do that. They don't have to do that because they've got Bush and Cheney and the Republican Party. And look what they have done and what they continue to do every single day. How many days left before the sons of bitches are run out of Washington? How many days left? 10? Do you know how much more they can steal in 10 days? How much more they will steal, not can? Come on, Malloy. How much is going to be stolen? I've never seen or heard of anything like this in the history of this country. Never read anything like this. It's unbelievable. And we kind of are letting it happen, aren't we? I mean, I don't know. But what can we do? I have no idea. What are we supposed to do? Take up weapons and go into the street? Yeah, that'll work. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your checks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you.
If you're worried about people finding work, you better increase demand if you're trying to create new jobs. In other words, if one worker can do more work, you got to create the need for more work.
And you wonder why we're in the situation we're in. You just, you know, if you spend 3 or 4 minutes, and if you have the stomach for it, 20 or 30 minutes listening to this rabid son of a bitch who has spent 8 years ripping the country to pieces. But listen to him talk about any topic at all. And that's the kind of gibberish that you hear coming out of his mouth. It's incredible, just incredible. And Republicans are going to continue. 56 million people voted for the Republican ticket this last election. Oh, my God, I wish you people would just get out of my country. Please, please, get out. And Bill writes, Mike, don't forget the illegal immigrants. Like it or not, they were once part of the workforce and holding a job, and now they are unemployed. There are estimated to be 20 million people, of which most were employed, and when they become unemployed, they are not counted. So I think it would be safe, Bill writes, to add another 5 or 10 million uncounted unemployed. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In Prairie 2, our... economics correspondent writes, Mike, there are 1.5 million people confined in Gaza. But in the U.S., we have 3.5 million homeless. The reflexive response is that there isn't a comparison because the homeless aren't behind concrete walls and barbed wire. But a fairly large percentage of the 2.3 million people in U.S. jails and prisons are there for little more than the crime of being homeless. A third to half of them with varying degrees of mental illness, but increasingly for petty theft in order to live. Long terms in prison for stealing bread. And by the way, didn't the French have a revolution about this? So you can't really expect Americans to care about Palestinians, who Americans think are the terrorists behind 9/11 or some other part of Iraq-Iranistan, when people that are just like them are living outdoors. People just like other Americans are living outdoors. People who went to the same grade school, ate the same hot dogs, watched the same cartoons, prayed at the same church, served in the same Marine Corps as other Americans. People who are using alleys for a bathroom and sleeping on a heating grate if they're lucky, eating garbage when they can find it, and being beat up by gangs and the cops. If they lash out or steal a Twinkie, they land in jail and stay there for want of bail money. The Palestinians really have no hope for compassion or justice from Americans. That's a perfectly valid point. And I wonder if the people who engineered the invasion of Gaza understood that. I have no reason to think that they didn't, since so many decisions that are made by the Israeli government are based on conditions in this country. Will the United States respond? To what degree will they respond? Is it going to be a mild condemnation? Will they vote against us in the UN Security Council? Will they abstain? Will they not show up? Well, let's wait until everything is going to hell, where the American people, the American media can't focus too much on what's going on over here. You think? Nah, couldn't be. Couldn't be. This is kind of interesting. I got this from Alan, who is the owner of the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California. And he writes, "Dear Mike, with the upcoming inauguration of President-elect Obama, there is still massive uncertainty as to the possibility that the Bush crime family and its cohorts will ever face justice. It occurs to me the American people have an unprecedented opportunity to make a dramatic statement on this vital need for justice. There will be in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of our new president over 1 million people. Some estimates are for 2 to 3 million. Imagine if, at the moment that Obama is sworn into office, there arises a chant from the assembled throng, 'Prosecute Bush and Cheney. Prosecute Bush and Cheney.' And that chant is repeated over and over for the full 2 minutes. This display would be impossible for our pathetic mainstream media to ignore, and would send a message to the world that most Americans want these criminals to face justice. In fact, recent polls show that almost 70% of our citizens favor investigations and prosecutions. If you and your fellow liberal talk radio hosts would embrace this concept and talk about it during the next 10 days, enough people would know about it to make the protest work. Those who had not heard about the chant but were in D.C. would quickly join in. Just imagine the impact that 1 million voices speaking out as one would create. I've been publicly speaking out, Alan writes, against these thugs since December 13th, 2000, the day after the Supreme Court stopped the counting of our votes. As the owner of the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California, I have a unique soapbox for my views. The marquee on my historic movie palace faces nearby Interstate 580 and can be seen by over 100,000 people daily. There has been political commentary on this sign almost constantly for 8 years. If you are interested in seeing our message, just Google Grand Lake Theater Marquee. Grand Lake Theater Marquee. And the first result you will encounter is a Flickr website that posts the messages and even has a slideshow function. You'll love it. Grand Lake Theater Marquee. Go ahead, everybody. Google that. Grand Lake Theater Marquee. I have also opened the theater for hosting events supporting groups opposing the Bush administration and the war, and have helped raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for those causes. Speaking out gives power to our voices and helps to heal the trauma we all have endured. Please support the concept and encourage your fellow radio hosts to talk about it. Keep it lit. Alan, Grand Lake Theater. Prosecute Bush and Cheney. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? I would hope that Alan would also send a copy of this letter to the handful of liberal radio talk show hosts who might respond by asking their audiences to do that. If you're listening, Alan, I hope you do. I hope you will get this into the hands of Tom Hartman and Randy Rhodes and Sam Cedar and who else? Bob Kincaid, Head on Radio. Who else? Kathy? Get it to Rachel Maddow. Well, I don't know. Now that she works for MSNBC, I don't know if she might mention it on a radio program, though. You know who the liberals are. You know who to go to. I don't mean Alan. I mean, we all know who to go to. We all know. Little clutch and handful and little huddling mass of remaining liberal talk shows, right? We have coming up probably in the next hour. I had kind of promised to leave the hoe from Wasilla completely off my program, especially anything she had to say. But dear God, she has given an exit interview, or not exit interview, an interview to, I wish it were, to one of these right-wing blogger, video producer, thug freaks. What's his name, Kathy? You remember? Ziegler. Is it Ziegler? John Ziegler, who is a real right-wing basket case, a complete ass, complete, total. And little bits of it, he thinks he's done a great job in exposing how Barack Obama got elected. I don't know what the hell his motive is, but little bits and snippets are all over YouTube. Oberman's been playing them. Who else? Rachel has been playing them, on and on and on and on. So we have a couple of cuts from that we're going to play for you tonight. Just to hear the insanity of this woman. I watched some of these video clips while she's sitting there talking to this Ziegler ass, and it's like, what? What? So I'm just for the sake of comic relief, I guess. Because everything is just not very really happy and playful tonight. This Friday, second Friday in January 2000 is not very happy. If I didn't have this damn cold, we would do some klezmer music tonight and jump up and the polka. I call it polka, but it's really klezmer music, and jump up and dance around. But I'm afraid I'd go into a coughing spasm. You know, another one. We're just about through with this. We are. Kathy had the flu, and I had this bronchitis. So, and Molly has had nothing. Kid must have a real strong immune system, right? Bless her heart. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, some information about a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives today. They approved a non-binding resolution recognizing Israel's right to defend itself against attacks from Gaza. Oh, God. Anyway, yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit. If you want to bail out and come back afterwards, if you've had enough of my talking about the Israeli invasion and occupation of Gaza, I understand. It's cool. Stay with us, though, if you'd like to. We'd like to have you stick around. And we are going to try to take some phone calls tonight. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
If you can't think, it's going to be hard to be a productive worker in the workplace.
That didn't seem to work, though, did it, George, huh? With you and your goddamn bandit buddies, right? Didn't seem to work. Most productive worker on the planet are Americans. Didn't seem to work, though, did it? As expected, and pardon my cynicism, but as expected, the U.S. House approved by an overwhelming bipartisan vote. The vote was 390-5. A so-called non-binding resolution to recognize Israel's, quote, to recognize Israel's right to defend itself against attacks from Gaza, reaffirming the United States' strong support for Israel, and, oh yeah, supporting the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, end quote. And the text of this resolution, you can get online. It's really something to read. I sit and read something like this resolution, and then I think to myself, why do so few people in our House of Representatives speak out in favor of a real peace process? That would be A. Why do so few people in our Congress speak out in support of people who, against whom genocide is being committed, against whom the most horrible situation? This is like the way the United States reacted when it first became clear back in the 40s what was happening to Jewish citizens in certain cities in Europe. And nobody did anything. Remember what Pastor Niemöller said, you know. I didn't say anything when they came for the trade unionists and the liberals and the communists and the Jews, and they finally came for me and there was nobody left to speak out, right? But here we are. I mean, God damn it, 80 years later, and we don't have the decency that the Congress, I'm not talking about you, Truth Seeker, or me, I'm talking about the Congress of the United States, both houses of Congress. What, does AIPAC own them? They can't make a statement based on morality and justice and decency. They can't say something like, yeah, we support the state of Israel as a political entity, but we do not support what is going on in the occupied territories and Gaza. As a matter of fact, we condemn it. No, we can't do that. Of course not. And why not? What the hell has happened to this country that the Israeli lobby is so powerful that it has emasculated our lawmaking branch of government? How did that happen? How did that happen? I have gotten dozens, okay, scores of emails over this week that we've been back on the air. Actually, it hasn't been a week because of the screw-ups with the company I work for. But what's it been, Kathy? 3 days. I've gotten scores of emails from people who say they're thanking me for speaking out. That's what they say, for speaking out about this issue. I have never heard anyone in American media say what you've been saying, Malloy. And that just, I mean, that embarrasses me. That makes me ashamed. Because I know that's true. There are very few people in any form of media, I don't care what it is, who will say, no, goddammit, this is not right. No, what do we do in this country? We line up with these cheesy, cheap, immoral, unjust resolutions. 390-5. And two of those five were from the Minnesota delegation. Representatives Keith Ellison and Betty McCollum. Who voted present. Betty McCollum from Minnesota, was among 22 legislators who refrained from voting. She said the resolution, quote, justifies Israel's bombardment of the citizens of Gaza, sanctions the incursion of Israeli troops into Gaza to clear this occupied territory of Hamas fighters, regardless of the human cost, and calls for, quote, supporting the Israeli-Palestinian peace process while innocent Palestinian women or children are being killed in Gaza. She goes on to say this resolution strongly and justifiably condemns Hamas. I disagree with you there, Representative McCollum, but let's go on with your statement. Quote, but the resolution's intent and substance are void of any relation to the hellish reality that is being inflicted on the citizens of Gaza right now, or the deprivation inflicted upon Gaza's families by Israel's harsh denial of food, medicine, and fuel over the past year, end quote. And Ellison, Keith Ellison, who is Muslim, acknowledged that he was torn, his word, torn about voting. He supports Israel's right to defend itself. But he also said that the resolution barely mentions the human suffering of the Palestinians in Gaza. Four Democrats voted against the resolution. Maxine Waters, Dennis Kucinich, Wisconsin's Gwen Moore, and West Virginia's Nick Rahal. And one Republican, Ron Paul of Texas. Well, I think the people in Minnesota should be absolutely proud of the fact that you have two members of your delegation who said, no, I'm not going to vote for it. And not to minimize their present vote, but they did vote present instead of voting, no, I don't support this. I don't know. Nobody speaks out for the Palestinians in the U.S. Congress. Nobody. Nobody. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. The fact is that few people, if any, speak out in this country in support of unqualified support of the Palestinian people. Nobody does. I mean, nobody does who's in a position of influence or power. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't. And I can't understand that. I really cannot understand that. What is going on there is, by any definition, a war crime. Oh, and by the way, where it concerns Bob sent me. Bob writes about Gaza. Israel's pushing ahead with its offensive in the Gaza Strip after branding a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire unworkable. Now ask yourself, what happened to Iraq when it defied the United Nations? Yeah, but your answer is inapplicable. It doesn't count. The situation is different somehow, you see. Our country's so-called interests dictates what answers are appropriate, or even what questions are allowed. Yeah, that's very true. Resolution after resolution in the UN General Assembly and the Security Council condemning actions by the State of Israel against the Palestinian people have been absolutely, completely, totally ignored over and over and over and over and over again. And this is why we're seen as absolute hypocrites. Come on, folks. I don't care what your position is on the Middle East. For just a moment, let's take everything out of context. If the UN Security Council rules A, and the nation being ruled against says, screw you, then what happens? Well, depending on the nation, we might invade. If the UN Security Council says the nation B, same thing, we support the nation who defies the UN resolution. This is why we are seen as outlaws. We have our little favorite pets, the people around this planet that we support and bend over backwards for. The Egyptians are another group. Come on, save your anti-Semitic rant for somebody else. Egyptians, Egypt is one of the places we send people to be tortured, and we support them with a couple of $1 billion in foreign aid every year. Isn't it Israel, Egypt, and Colombia, which are the three largest recipients of American foreign aid now? Isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's changed. For the longest time, it was Egypt and Israel. That was part of the payoff to get them to agree to a peace deal. Here, we'll give you billions every year. But there's no support for the Palestinians. Why is that? That's a legitimate question. All these dead children, what the hell have they ever done to deserve to be murdered when they're 5 years old? And did you see the story on the front page of the New York Times today? Above the fold, there it was. The story of the emaciated children that have been discovered, the Palestinian children discovered in the rubble of their blown up houses, house next to their dead and decaying corpses of their parents. And the kids are sitting there. Just sitting there. Oh, I know, we've got problems here, and like Prairie 2 said, come on, Malloy, you're not going to, we didn't say it this way, but the essence was, you're not going to whip up any support in this country for Palestinians. You know, goddamn, we're concerned about, and Prairie 2 didn't say this, but the implication is, and he's right, the implication is, when we're worried about our jobs or the price of this or the loss of everything because of Bush policies here at home, do we pay any attention to Bush and Clinton and Bush 1 and Reagan and let's just keep going backwards all the way back to Harry Truman? Do we pay any attention to the policies that have led us to this place where we are in a goddamn death struggle with Muslims around the globe and most of it centers on this particular issue? So, you know, even members of Congress who are sympathetic to Palestinians don't call themselves pro-Palestinian. They don't dare. And they what they do is to, even though they may feel that it's just somehow not right for this to be going on to the people of Palestine, they still will vote with the people say, oh yeah, well, we support Israel. Yes, we do. We support anything Israel does. Anything. Nick Rahal again, the West Virginia Democrat, who voted against this particular measure and some other measures, said, quote, when these events occur, there's almost a knee-jerk reaction of Congress that endorses 1,000% what Israel is doing, end quote. He goes on to say, Israel is our ally. It always has been. With which I perfectly agree. But I don't believe in allowing that to blind us to what is in our best interest or giving knee-jerk approval to anything Israel does. We don't do that with any other ally, end quote. And that's Nick Rahal, member of Congress from West Virginia. And that raises the issue, the question. He raised it right there. We don't do that with any other ally. Why Israel? Somebody tell me why Israel? Why? We don't do it with Great Britain. We don't do it with France. We don't do it with any of our allies in World War II. We don't do it with Australia. We don't do it with Canada. Why Israel? Without exception, why? I don't have an answer. The question is rhetorical. You don't have an answer either. But that's what we do. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, said yesterday when the Senate passed a resolution, quote, our resolution reflects the will of the state of Israel and the will of the American people, end quote. You son of a bitch. What about the will of the Palestinians? What about the dead people that have done nothing? What about the 800 Palestinians who have been blown to pieces, Harry Reid, you scum sucking coward? Ah. His measure, the Senate's measure, offered, quote, unwavering commitment, end quote, to Israel. Unwavering commitment. Do you know what that means? What does that mean? What does that mean to you? That if the IDF decided to start dismembering captured Syrians, you know, just chop them to pieces in the town square, according to Harry Reid, we give unwavering support to Israel. Commitment to Israel. Commitment for what, Harry? Commitment to do what? Oh, my God. Yeah. And the thing that is clearly apparent to me is the risk I take by bringing this issue up. I understand that. I understand it. But you know what? I'm at a point in my radio career, I don't give a goddamn. Do you understand that? I really don't care. I don't care. I have been threatened so many times by people I worked for, networks, radio stations, to stay away from that issue. And I've always refused. I will not do it. As long as somebody gives me a microphone, when this kind of stuff comes up, you bet I'm going to talk about it until somebody pulls the plug on the program. I don't think that's going to happen this time. But Kathy says, click. No. No. The people that we work with now are not... They may not completely agree with what I'm saying tonight, but they certainly don't get involved in censorship. But I'm so sick of it. And if you have any kind of compassion or heart or sense of justice, you have to be sick of it too. If you're not sick of what is happening and has happened to the Palestinian people, then take your pulse, because if you don't care, you're dead.
Underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby by night. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and
Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Jesus God. Couple emails here, and then we're going to. Attempt to move on. This is from Alan, Miami, who writes, Mike, your position supportive of Palestinians and fairness on the continuing Gaza massacre is right and justified. I say this as an American Jew interested in a real peace process and the end to the endless arming to the teeth of Israel by the United States. It's about time. I'm sorry, it's about money and geopolitical resources and control strategies, not to mention the end times narrative of the well-funded rapture folks and those who benefit from them. If you look at your position and the stands you make, you will see how much, if not most, are the political positions of the Green Party, which needs to be supported and heard. A Green would either vote against the House resolution or introduce one that refers to the constant horrors and the blockade. Look at the anti-blockade actions of Cynthia McKinney, the Green Party's recent presidential candidate. She sponsored the positions of the Israeli peace movement for years when she was a Democrat in Congress, and for this she was attacked bitterly by her own party. She has found a home among friends who share her sense of justice and outrage at the military support for Israel. Peace, justice, equality, health care, democracy, clean elections, clean energy, ecological wisdom, and an end to corporate control of all of our institutions and legislation What's there not to like, Mike? Green Party. Al in Miami. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Kyle in Detroit, who has a blog site, ghostofwellstone.blogspot.com, Kyle writes, Mike, this week has been nerve-shattering, to say the least. If it is not the news in Gaza, it's the news at home. Although you try to grin and bear it more times than not, reality kicks in the front door sometimes. While the rich play gotcha day in and day out, whether it's with human life or human livelihood, Barack Obama was correct, a stimulus is needed, yet Republicans and a number of Democrats want to spend the money elsewhere. What the blank? I was informed today I may become a statistic as early as this coming Monday. I do not have a clue how to react to this, living in Detroit. I'm fortunate enough to have my home paid off, yet that does not help keep it warm in the winter or the lights on or pay the taxes on it, etc. So when I look around at the 35 people I now work with and we discuss carpooling to the unemployment office next week, how do I tell them, sorry, help is possibly on the way? Mike, thanks, as I may sign off in the weeks to come, as this expense may fall on the sword. So if I miss shows, you and the Democracy Interactive folks know why. The bastards that did this need to be held accountable. Kyle, sincerely, Kyle, Detroit. Yeah, well, yes, absolutely. But accountability is not something that is very available in this country, and it hasn't been for a long time. The military refuses to take responsibility or accountability for what it does. The Congress, both houses, refuses. The executive branch refuses. Corporate America urinates on accountability, just urinates all over it repeatedly. They are no more interested in accountability than cutting their own throats. So, I don't know. Oh, by the way, both Israel and Hamas said no to the UN resolution that called for a ceasefire. Israel said continued barrages of rocket fire from Hamas show that the United Nations resolution was, quote, not practical, end quote. Hamas also dismissed the UN resolution, although one Hamas official said it was being studied. In Beirut, a Hamas spokesman said the resolution, quote, does not suit us because it is not in the best interest of the Palestinian people. That's according to Agence France-Presse. So it's going to continue. According to New York Times, health officials said that the overall death toll passed 780 today. That's according to Reuters, with women and children making up about 40% of the dead. The Israeli death toll reached 13, including 10 soldiers and 3 civilians. Women and children making up 40% of the dead. White House spokesman Scott Stanzel said, quote, this situation will not improve until Hamas stops lobbing rockets into Israel. We'll be back in a minute. The game.
Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore.
So if you're a younger worker out there, you're now looking at more people retiring who will be living longer, and those you have to keep paying more monthly benefits over time, who've been promised greater monthly benefits.
And your point, moron? Kill them? All right, it is time once again for A Moment with Bob. And yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Mike, I love horror. It's my favorite genre ever since I was a kid. Books, movies, radio, comics, whatever, I'll read, watch, or listen to it. I used to say there are really only two kinds of movies worth going to, a good horror film or a good comedy. Everything else is just drama. Either scare me or make me laugh, but don't waste my time with 90 minutes of blather, blather, yak, yak, dripping with overblown, half-baked existential angst. No thanks, not interested. And of course, I've had people ask me my whole life why I concern myself with that kind of entertainment, because 95% of it is pure crap. Well, 95% of everything is crap. Now, I'm the first to admit that the themes of the horror genre are very few, but that's not a valid criticism. It certainly didn't stop Hollywood producers from cranking out thousands of versions of boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy finds girl movies. You can play just about any rock and roll song ever written if you know three chords, G, C, and D. What's important is who's playing the guitar. If you're going to venture into the wonderful world of horror, you will need some hip boots. It took me the longest time not to get suckered in by a great title or poster. When I was 9 years old, I breathlessly anticipated the terrors that awaited me in a movie called From Hell It Came. Little did I know at the time that I'd soon be watching a movie about a walking killer tree, or to be more precise, somebody trying to walk while inside a sheet of sculpted foam rubber, that a character in the film would actually be in any peril from a guy in a tree suit that at best could only shuffle around on level ground, broke my 9-year-old suspension of disbelief. Here was a monster that could easily be avoided by simply strolling away. You want to see some scary trees? Ones that aren't even mobile? Then watch again the haunted talking trees scene in The Wizard of Oz. Now imagine how your little kid psyche would have been warped for years afterwards if one of those trees ripped Toto's head off and swallowed it. But I digress. After toiling in the horror mine, you will be periodically rewarded with a nugget or two, a book or movie where the writer, director, and characters come together to create a story of increasing suspense, dread, and terror, relieved only with the well-timed shocks of horror. It doesn't happen often, but when those chords are expertly played, it really is something. And until lately, I was hooked on it. I started watching an Al Pacino, John Cusack movie last night called City Hall. In less than 10 minutes, I had to turn it off. This isn't a horror film by any means, but the opening scenes ended in a nightmare, and I couldn't take it. Here's the scene. New York City. It's raining. A man is walking his little boy, dressed in a yellow raincoat, down the street to school. At the corner, an undercover narcotics detective confronts a drug dealer. The deal goes bad, and the pusher draws his gun and shoots. The undercover cop pulls his gun and fires. The dealer goes down, the cop goes down. But the last bullet the cop fires hits the little boy. A gout of blood erupts from the back of his raincoat, and the boy crumbles to the ground. The father picks up his son and begins to wail. I punched the eject button on the DVD remote. It was too real. It is a trite observation, one that has been made many times, but I'll state it again anyway. Current events are the real horror stories. Nothing is over in 2 hours. Nothing is resolved. There are no end credits. One headline, Israeli ground troops invade Gaza. Or just one photograph of a dead child lying in the rubble transcends everything Stephen King has ever written. There are links I'm afraid to click on because I know it would be too terrible to see what awaits behind photos. Israel launches airstrikes against Gaza. And in parentheses is the word graphic. Jonathan Schwartz began an entry in his blog, A Tiny Revolution, on July 17th of 2006. It went like this. The influence I and most everyone else can have on the ever greater catastrophe in the Mideast is minimal. End quote. That is completely correct. All we can do is know that something god-awful is going on. Realize it is not going to stop. And our government has been enabling this hell on earth for 60 years. Since 1949, a conservative estimate of the cumulative total direct USA to Israel is $108 billion. The United States provides nearly $3 billion in grants annually to Israel. Yesterday, well, January 8th, the U.S. Senate voiced strong support for Israel's battle against Hamas militants in Gaza. We know that one phone call from the President of the United States to Shimon Peres could end the violence in a day. If the President said he'd cut off this year's $3 billion, if he said, quote, we'll not sell you one more jet, bomb, or bullet, end quote, the conflict would be over. But that's one phone call that will not be made. The reasons behind our country's supporting madness are many, and were summed up perfectly by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said, quote, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government, end quote. The layers of madness are deep and broad. There is no operative logic at work. If you ask this question, doesn't terrorism stop when you stop terrorizing people? You'll be dismissed as a simplistic idiot by the minions of the powers that be. There's money to be made in madness. To question that is to go against the American way. The illusion has always been that in some way the madness could be controlled. To believe that is to take the first step into insanity while the dead pile up in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Gaza. There are 26 other ongoing wars around the world. Somehow, it makes more sense to continue the killing. Momentum is a terrible thing sometimes. In the meantime, the walking dead, aliens from outer space, psycho killers lurking on Elm Street, and entities from beyond the grave are an escape from the real world. 294 days until Halloween and counting. Bob. Another episode of A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. All right, I want to do some of this. I can't even get to the 30 confirmed dead in one family in Gaza as a result of Israeli shelling. We'll just not go there, okay? John Ziegler, right-wing Palin apologist and nutball John Ziegler, released excerpts of his interview with Sarah Palin, which is part of his upcoming documentary titled How Obama Got Elected. If you saw any of that, you saw that across the screen, superimposed on the video, HowObamaGotElected.com. Ziegler's theory is that left-wing media bias assassinated Palin and therefore cost the Republican Party the election. Here's the first one. Ziegler asked Palin about the Katie Couric interviews. Palin regrets the interviews and says Couric considered herself the center of the universe. Palin defended her own ignorance during those interviews, especially about having no answer as to what publication she read. Palin maintains she does read local papers and USA Today. So there.
The Katie Couric interview in general. Yeah. How did you feel about it when it finished it? Did you feel as if it had gone well, not well?
No, I knew it didn't go well. I knew it didn't go well the first day, and then we gave her a couple of other segments after that. And my question to the campaign was, after it didn't go well the first day, why were we going to go back for more? And because of however it works in you know, that upper echelon of power brokering in the media and with spokespersons, and it was told me that, yeah, we were going to go back for more. And going back for more was not a wise decision either. I never saw the interview after Katie edited it, they spliced it together, did whatever they did, and then aired it. Never saw how it came across. But my understanding is so many other topics that were brought up certainly weren't portrayed as accurately, perhaps, as they could have, should have been after that interview. Because, Katie, you're not the center of everybody's universe. Maybe that's why they didn't think to ask that question amongst so many other things to be asked. To me, the question was more along the lines of, do you read? What do you guys do up there? What is it that you read? And perhaps I was just too flippant in my answer back to her. But, of course, I read newspapers. I read publications. I spend a lot of time, of course, reading our local papers and the highly circulated publications here in Alaska, because that's my job, is to know the business of Alaska and our communities, but also USA Today. Yes.
Oh, my God. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Oh, if you become the key, oh, what will it mean for me? Oh, if you become the key, oh, what will it mean for me?
Take it to the bridge. Just because I can see the moon doesn't make me an astronaut. You and your foreign policy expertise.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to this Ho from Wasilla stuff. The second one we have here is the interview. This right-wing apologist and thug, John Ziegler. He then played a Saturday Night Live Tina Fey parody of Palin and asked how it made Sarah Palin feel. Palin answered that Mama Grizzly rises up in me. Okay. When she sees such clips. No, seriously. Then she whines about how she was exploited by the media. Yeah. She just kept saying dumb things, and that filthy media just kept reporting on it.
I believe marriage is meant to be a sacred institution between two unwilling teenagers.
How does that make you feel?
The Mama Grizzly rises up in me hearing things like that. You know, here again. Cool, fine, come attack me. But when you make a suggestion like that, that certainly attacks a kid, that kills me. It kills me.
Did you know about that when you went on the show?
No.
Would you have gone on Saturday Night Live if you had known about that?
I still would have gone on SNL because, you know, that you've got to show that, one, you know, you have to be able to laugh at yourself also.
It seems to me as if Tina Fey and Katie Couric have been treated as almost heroes or heroines among the media elite for what the perception of what they did to you. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, job security is important in my agenda here in the state. I'm just helping those outside of my state also keep their jobs secure. But yeah, I did see that Tina Fey was named Entertainer of the Year.
Oh my God.
Katie Couric's ratings have risen. And I know that a lot of people are capitalizing on, I don't know, I think some perhaps exploiting that was done via me, my family, my administration. That's a little bit perplexing. It also says a great deal, though, about our society.
Well, what it says about you, Ms. Palin, is that, two words, toxic narcissism. I mean, I have never really heard anyone so clearly define herself or himself as suffering from this in its well-developed stages than Sarah Palin. Toxic narcissism, here it is. Now, I realize a lot of people in Congress, a lot of people in government, a lot of people in entertainment, in corporate America, also suffer from narcissistic impulses and tendencies that are just absolutely embarrassing to witness. But this woman was going to be president of the United States, you see, because, well, the possibility was certainly clear when you have someone who is a four-time cancer survivor, 72 years old, who is expected to live another 4 years at least, and there sits Sarah Palin. So at that point, I mean, one thing we can say about this moron who's leaving is that he was a moron as far as being a narcissist. I don't think. What do you think, Kathy? Was Bush a narcissist? Huh? He was? To the degree that someone like Sarah Palin? Really? Open your mic. I feel like I'm talking to a ghost.
Who, me? Ooh, me? No, I think Bush was narcissistic, obviously. I think he, but I believe he came upon
But wasn't
upon
he just
his.
A dry drunk?
I believe he came upon his because he started to believe the lies that were fed gently to him by his handlers. No, really, you're the president. You can do what you want, Mr. President. You can protect entire
Well,
I
realize you're the one with the background in this, but I would disagree that that's narcissism. I would say that is just... I don't know, borderline personality disorder. I mean, we've got the
DSM-4.
DSM-4.
Yeah. Used to be the 3SQR, now it's the 4, I believe.
Right. Well, it's right upstairs. We had to get it during the break and look this up. But Sarah Palin, I think, displays one of the purest forms of toxic narcissism that I've heard from anyone who has gotten the kind of attention as quickly as she's gotten in, I don't care what they've been in. I really do. All right, we have a couple more, but we got time to run one? No, I guess we don't. We'll do it when we come back. And also I have an email I want to share with you from the guy who called in, Bruce in California, the other night about the geothermal energy and his involvement in that particular subject. All right. So we'll do that. And then what we shall do is take some phone calls. You want to do that? Huh? I have, in the 3 days we've been on the air this week, with everything kind of telescoped, excuse me, trying to cover some of this stuff, I have completely not covered issues that our military affairs correspondent has sent in. And there are several issues that regarding. I also got an email from a former Marine and conservative named David. I think it's David. So we're probably going to have to catch up on that stuff on Monday. But anyway, just so you know, we haven't dropped these issues that are so important to veterans who have gone through the past 8 years of horror with this filthy, corrupt so-called commander in chief and the things he has done, he and his cohorts have done to the United States military. So I guess we'll do that Monday. All right, when we come back, two more from Palin. And then this email that I think you find interesting from Bruce in California. And then we'll do your phone calls. Sound all right? I don't think we're going to have time for a polka tonight. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. We have two more cuts for you from this Palin interview by Ron Ziegler, or John Ziegler, right-wing nutcase if ever one existed. He is putting together a documentary called How Obama Got Elected. And, of course, his thesis is that the only reason Obama got elected was because the media were so unfair to the hoe from Wasilla, the audacity of them to ask her questions. I mean, here's somebody who wants to be president of the United States, yes, president of the United States, and the audacity of these sons of bitches in mainstream media to ask her the little softball questions that they did. You see, that's not how it works in a fascist state. And Ziegler is anything, if he's anything, he is a fascist. Sarah Palin is just a hoe from Wasilla, and she and her pimp were roundly defeated. In this next one here, Palin wonders if Caroline Kennedy, who, you know, someone might remind her is not running for vice president, if Caroline Kennedy would be handled with kid gloves, or would she be treated as badly as the hoe was, perhaps due to some mysterious class issue. And then Ziegler asked her what she thinks her chances would have been on the Obama ticket. And this shows you the depths of this woman's idiocy. If ever there was a time in this nation's history when the so-called Republican Party and the so-called Democratic Party are ideologically at the core, miles apart. Now, I understand a lot of people think that the pieces are interchangeable, and to a certain degree, I agree with that. But where it concerns the issues that we're talking about, you know which ones we're talking about, they could not be more polarized than they are now. But Sarah Palin, you see, thinks that, well, if she would have been on the Democrat, well, here, let's listen to her.
I've been interested also to see how Caroline Kennedy will be handled, and if she'll be handled with kid gloves, or if she will be under such a microscope also. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and I think that as we watch that, we will perhaps be able to prove that there is a class issue here also that was such a factor in the scrutiny of my candidacy versus, say, the scrutiny of what her candidacy may be.
If, by chance, you had been chosen as a vice presidential candidate for Barack Obama,
uh-huh. mm-hmm.
pretend he wanted to be really postpartisan,
mm-hmm.
and there's this governor in Alaska who's a reformer, she's an expert on energy issues, won't this be great for the country? How do you think your candidacy would have been treated?
I think they would have loved me as a candidate, and I've already lived through that more on a local level. There have been times where here in Alaska, I've taken on my own Republican Party when there has been corruption, and I've been one to say, nope, enough is enough. We're going to clean up this party, and the leader's got to go, and we got to start anew. Well, the mainstream media here in Alaska, they've loved me through those episodes. And then, though, the minute that is that I have done something that is, you know, back to the conservative roots, and we're going to not grow government here in Alaska, and we're going to develop our resources, and that's when even the mainstream media here in Alaska, they turn on you. So there's so much hypocrisy in it all. It's pretty baffling. But, yeah, had I been chosen perhaps to run as a reformer on the Democrat ticket, we would have seen an absolutely different and I think, if you will, a much prettier profile of Sarah Palin and the Palin family and my administration.
Oh, Jesus God. As soon as I hear any sort of public figure refer to himself or herself in the third person, that's when I just want to start gouging out my own eyeballs. I don't know why. But the sound of this woman's voice is just, it's astonishingly bad. All right, here's the last one. It's only 27 seconds. Ziegler asked her why in the world she would ever want to go through this again and consider a run in 2012. And Palin says, well, obviously her country needs her.
Why would you ever want to go through this again?
Oh, my goodness. That's a darn good question.
Darn
sometimes
right.
When I open up the paper in the morning and I see something that I know has to be corrected and yet disappointedly realize they're not going to correct it anyway, so what's the use? That's a good question. I would do it again, though, knowing that there is great need in our country for reform.
And you certainly represent that, don't you, sweetheart? Now, I hopefully that will be the last that we of Sarah Palin's voice that we have on this program. It may not be. She is the gift that keeps on giving. What does Overman call her? Like a salad bar of political idiocy? But let's move on. This is from Bruce in California. And Bruce writes, Mike, when we spoke, was it last night? When we spoke last night about Bush's declaration of a Marine National Park, it really seemed that you didn't appreciate just how important what I've done really is. We've spoken enough times that you have a sense of who I am, and I am most definitely not a person who exaggerates its own importance. I want to make it clear that my hydrothermal patent is not important because I patented it. It's important because someone did. That it was me is secondary, and I swear to you I'd be just as excited about this if someone else had patented it because of what it represents. Now, let me digress from Bruce's email for a moment. If you heard the phone call the other night, I got him off the air quickly because I forget what the reason was. Because he wanted to explain this to me, and I said, look, we just, you know, this is not the time to do it. And then I got this email. All right, let me go on. He says, I don't know how I can impress on you that this is a true revolution in energy technology, but I'll try. Ever since mankind walked upright, we've gotten our energy from the same sources. Besides animals, we have used the sun, wind, water, geothermal, and, of course, we've burned stuff. When electricity came on the scene, we used the exact same sources to generate it. The first completely new source of power for humans was nuclear power, something never before controlled. The second is hydrothermal energy. It is literally that important. What makes hydrothermal energy unique are two main factors. The first is that it is constant, 24/7, 365. No other renewable source can make that claim. The second is its incredible energy density, translated to mean that the energy is very tightly packed. If you've ever seen a commercial wind farm or solar site, you know that they have to cover a lot of ground in order to gather enough energy to make a difference. That's because the energy from the sun and wind are not dense at all. In hydrothermal energy, because it is so tightly focused, like from one small vent, and it is so damn hot, up to 750 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to melt lead, it's like a mini nuclear explosion. The energy being emitted from just the known vents is roughly equivalent to the entire human consumption. And there are tens of thousands of miles of ocean floor where vents should be located that had never been explored. I've tried since the middle of last year to get you to let me talk about this. Last night, after mentioning my website on air, I had almost 500 hits. So there is definitely an interest in what I'm doing. I received 3 or 4 congratulatory emails from listeners as well. Mike, I urge you to give me a chance to either explain this to you personally or on air. I need the exposure, and your listeners will definitely recognize how important this really is. You asked why I haven't done anything with it, but I have. I've gone from being completely unknown to almost 22,000 views of my animation on Metacafe since December 23rd. That's metacafe.com. There's a longer email address here, but anyway, let me go on. I've received unsolicited calls from Malaysia, India, China, Indonesia, and Europe, and I know the Saudis are looking very closely at this. It's an energy revolution. I'm hoping to draw your attention to it because you can give your listeners something that they haven't heard of before. It really is important. And as I said before, it's not important because I invented it. I've provided the world with the only practical, workable model for utilizing this astounding source of energy. And that is an accomplishment I'm very proud of. Bruce in California. All right, I've forwarded this on to Kathy, and she's going to book Bruce on the program for one night next week. Right, Kathy? Okay, she'll do her best, she says. She gives me that look like, I'll do my best. I'll do my best. All right, so we'll get Bruce on. And, you know, there was no intent on my part to denigrate anything that Bruce had to say. It just didn't feel like the right time. But I guess I could have been a little bit less abrupt. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I think younger workers, first of all, younger workers have been promised benefits to government, that have been promised benefits that we can't keep. That's just the way it is.
Oh, really? Guy cracks me up. In a very bad way. All right, it is 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls. Do we have anybody? Oh, we certainly do. Let's start with, who do you want to start with, Kathy? Terrence? Let's start with Terrence, who is calling from Chicago, listening on the Internet. Terrence, welcome to the program. Hey, Terrence.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Terrence.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
You're on the air, sir.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm talking to Mike Malloy?
Yes, yes, yes.
My God. Are you kidding me?
No.
I've been waiting like an hour to talk to you.
I understand. What you got on your mind?
No. Well, you started in the middle, in the beginning of your program about blockbusting.
Yes.
And being from Chicago and, you know, born and raised here, big Irish family and all that. Blockbusting was started by a black realtor here in Chicago. He went door to door and telling people who are white or Italian or, you know, whatever, you're going to have a black neighbor. It was a big deal down here.
Okay, now let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
Terrence, you said you've been over an hour waiting. What exactly is the point of your call? I mean, did I say tonight that you felt necessary to call in with that information? Because as far as I'm concerned, blockbusting started here in Atlanta a long time ago.
I've never been to Atlanta.
Well, I used to live in Chicago. But
did
that's
you really?
All right, Terrence, if you don't mind, I'm going to say adios. I appreciate you checking in. But, again, I have no earthly idea why, A, you called, B, you held on for over an hour to make such a kind of goofy statement.
I've been to Florida. You used to live in Ohio.
Yeah.
My mom's from Missouri.
Yeah, okay. All right. No, I can get that from phone call, like from that guy. Dick is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Which is a neat trick. If you could, how are you listening on KPTK, Dick? I thought they delayed our broadcast.
They do. I'm cold calling. I'm doing it the hard way. It's the only way.
Okay.
The only option. It's the only option I got available, so I take advantage of whatever I can.
There you go.
Hey, look, I want to raise this issue of betrayal. You know, I spend most of my spare time trying to keep up, and even some of my time isn't spare. Trying to keep up with the Republican economic war on the middle class here, and also on the guys abroad as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with their anti-American fascist agenda, I think best highlighted perhaps by the Patriot Act, maybe, and their attack on now the Detroit auto unions, of course, made possible by their credit destroying deregulations.
Uh huh. It's just a long list, isn't it?
Well, it's an economic class war. It's been going on for, God, as long as I've been around. But you know, I expect it from these guys, you know, and their enabling media. I've come to expect it from them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've got difficulty accepting is the sycophantic liberals in our own camp. You know, these enablers supporting this contract on America is what I call it. Matter of fact, I think I first coined that phrase after I read a book by that name, which conveniently, of course, blames the JFK assassination on the mob instead of the guys that actually, you know, did it. But it's the people on our own side. We've got Pelosi, who used to be on the Intelligence Oversight Committee, went along with everything that came down. Now we can't investigate anything because she says we got higher priorities. Same thing with Harry Reid. Here's a guy that stands up on the floor and defends his pal, Ted Stevens, a real badass Republican with 7 felony convictions, and they give him a standing round of applause. You've got the new president, the change president, bringing in all the guys from the from the Clinton administration, which wasn't exactly progressive, mm-hmm. To say the least. And now we've got all these criminals in the security agencies, Admiral Dennis Blair. This guy was involved in some of the genocidal murders in East Timor in 1999, mm-hmm. Despite orders to the contrary, apparently. I don't know what orders he was following, but, you know, he was helping out there. And we've got Brennan, who they wanted to make CIA director, this new administration. He was all for torturing people. So, you know, I got a problem with our own side. Now, I'm not sure we should give these guys a break. These people are supposed to represent our interests.
I don't think we should give them a break either. And, Dick, thank you. I think what needs to be done is just an incredibly intense effort to put pressure on the current configuration of the Democratic Party that is now running the country. And if the pressure doesn't work, then let's just opt out and arm ourselves. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your money grow, you know it compounds over time, which means money grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Oh, my God. You know, we were thinking about putting together a sound file, a kind of a kiss my ass, George Bush, I'm glad to see you leave, montage of sound, and we don't know where to begin. I mean, 8 years of this. The sound montage would be 7 or 8 hours long. It's almost impossible to do. Kathy has said she's going to attempt. You still planning on attempting?
I have not given up.
Okay.
I've spent my entire adult life, it seems, chronicling the many hours of wit and wisdom of George W. Bush.
Yeah, well,
it deserves some sort of homage or something. I don't have any shoes I can throw that Condi wouldn't be back there with a catcher's mitt trying to field, so
that's true.
It's all I can do for my country.
We shall
because I'm a reformer and a maverick. Did you know I was a maverick?
We shall watch and report. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening on the internet.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? Happy New Year.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you again.
It's good to hear from you. You know what? I think didn't Kathy do like a 5-minute snippet of like some of his best cuts?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. You were asking earlier about Israelis' power and why they have such a control over the United States and pretty much over most of the world. I used to work with an evangelical, and in their point of view, in their religious viewpoint, the whole Gaza Strip, and even as far as that goes, the West Bank, was the land given to Abraham by God. So
Wait. Let me back up just for a second, because I don't want to let pass what you said, if you don't mind a correction.
Sure, no problem.
I don't think the Israelis have influence in other parts of the world. I really don't. They have political influence in this country. And I've said it before, I think it's because of the collective guilt that has been handed off to a couple of subsequent generations after the Holocaust in World War II. And around that issue, the United States had ample opportunity to welcome Jewish refugees to almost to have prevented it. and did not. So there is a tremendous amount of guilt. There's also the Judeo-Christian thing that applies there. So many politicians have always claimed that this is a Judeo-Christian nation, which it is not. But as they never say it's a Muslim-Christian nation or a Judeo-Muslim nation. You see what I'm saying? It's Judeo-Christian.
Oh, right.
So there has to be that. And then the third thing, and possibly even maybe the first thing, was the strategic importance of Israel during the 50-year-long Cold War with the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union and so many Arab countries were allied in a loose sense of that word, and we had to have a counterbalance in the Middle East. What better counterbalance? Don't forget the United States under Harry Truman was the first country to recognize the legitimacy of the State of Israel after the UN created it, more or less. So,
okay.
I just wanted to get that out there because I have a lot of people who listen to this program, Mike, who just wait for me to let pass a statement like, well, the Israelis have a lot of influence or the Jews have a lot of influence around the world. They just wait to see if I'm going to let that pass. And if I do, then all of a sudden, not only am I anti-Semitic, but I'm a dumbass. So,
yeah, no, okay, I stand corrected. I didn't mean to put words in your mouth.
No, that's okay.
It was just my misperception.
No. They never say, that your caller put words in your mouth. They say things like, how did you let that go by? Why didn't you tell that guy? So,
yeah,
all right. You understand. You understand why I had to say that, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. And if I could really quick go off-roading, I have a solution, I think, for this whole Blago Burris thing that might actually work. And if I can bounce it off of you real quick and see what you think of it.
Good. Do it.
If the Senate went up to Burris and said, look, okay, you're making a complete scene of this. So what we're going to do is if you want to pursue this, we will elect you. We will put you in the Senate, and then we will instantly will have you expelled under conflict of interest. And all you need is two-thirds of a vote for expulsion, which they definitely would have. And just explain, it's nothing personal about you, but there's a conflict of interest how when he was first charged with all these crimes, you said that they shouldn't seat anyone he makes a choice of. Then all of a sudden it was you, and you had a change of heart. So you see where the conflict of interest is. Why don't they go around about that way doing it?
I don't know. The Democrats have given themselves a classic example of a tar baby from the old Uncle Remus stories. a tar baby. And I know a lot of people listening right now are going to find tremendous racism in that statement. But I think most people with the sense God gave us a sack of doorknobs will understand exactly what I'm talking about. What should happen with Roland Burris is he should be seated. He should be the junior senator from Illinois. I mean, Burris is absolutely, he's a former attorney general of Illinois, for Christ's sake. He's absolutely clean.
I have no problem with him.
And not seating him is giving Rod Blagojevich exactly what he wanted when he made the appointment. Blagojevich doesn't give a tinker's damn about Burris.
He's a distraction.
Right. Well, he's a distraction, but he's also a kick in the teeth to anyone who would challenge B-Rod's power. So what does he do? He nominates a perfectly qualified man of an African American man, and then stands back and watches while the right wing in this country accuses the Democratic Party immediately of being racist, A. B, a perfectly good person being denied a seat. All this nonsense that Harry Reid is coming up with that the Attorney General in Illinois has to sign off, none of that is true. None of it. And what
it would be a catch-22 either way, because if you don't seat him, you're a racist, and if you do, then you got Sean Hannity saying they're hiring criminals in the Senate.
Well, it's yes, and the Democrats did this to themselves, starting with the Democrats in Illinois. I'm not going to defend Blagojevich. I think he's just a worm. He's like so many politicians, most of whom are Republican, but certainly a lot of Democrats. He's just a sneaky, slimy worm. But here's the truth. He hasn't even been charged with anything.
Right.
Nothing. Nobody has brought forward indictments against this punk. Nobody has what he's accused of is talking about selling off this Senate seat. He's also there's information on the tape where he insisted on payoffs and kickbacks during his time as governor, most of which, it's my understanding, were not followed through on, because I think even the people who normally pay off and kick back realize that this guy's a jackass. So,
but that's still conspiracy, though.
Well, that's something that I don't know, Mike. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if talking about selling a Senate seat with a couple people constitutes a conspiracy. I honestly don't know. If it were, then the question is, why hasn't Fitzgerald already indicted this guy or charged him? He doesn't need to go to a grand jury. He can charge him. What he did was arrest him, pull him out of his house, and arrest him. That makes no damn sense to me at all.
Because he didn't have enough evidence. He probably wanted to make an airtight case, and it seeped out with the Tribune and all that stuff. That's what I think, at least. I don't know.
You're probably right. You know, I've been out of Chicago now for 8 years, but and only spent just under 4 there. But Jesus Christ, what a corrupt state! I mean, it really is. Illinois, Republican and Democrat, which is not to say that there's not a lot of good, hardworking Democrats, and it's not unknown to have good, hardworking Republicans in that state too. But
yeah.
The National Democrats really just very carefully opened their mouths and inserted their feet and their asses into their own mouths with this whole Roland Burris thing. The Senate Democrats should have kept their mouths shut and stayed out of it. This was a state issue. As much as of a punk that Blagojevich seems to be, what the hell's he been charged with? Being a punk? Oh, okay. Well, then let's remove about 80% of the U.S. House and Senate. You see what I'm saying? I'm not defending the guy. I'm not defending B-Rod. I really am not. But, oh, my God, why take it out on Roland Burris?
Yeah. Oh, understandable. I mean, I completely understand. Well, Mike, thanks for the time. I won't tie up your lines. I'll talk to you soon, though.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate what you had to say. Appreciate it. And I wasn't, trying to, play some hard-ass role with Mike about Israel having – because Israel doesn't have, political influence – to any degree. I mean, most countries in Europe recognize the criminality of some of the actions of the state of Israel. And their parliaments will vote to display their awareness of that criminality. It's only in this country where you have a resolution like the one that passed through the House today. What was the vote again, Kathy? 390-5? Jesus, God, what was the Senate vote? That's what I'm talking about. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew this abbreviated week. Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. All right, just when you think you know what you're talking about, somebody sends you something that shows once again that you don't know what the hell you're talking about. My statement about Burris Attorney General, former Attorney General Roland Burris. Kathy, remember Rolando Cruz up in Chicago? Remember we had him on a couple of times, got to know him. I just got this from who sent this? J.H.? I'll just go with J.H. How's that? Huh?
Let me guess. Burris wanted to kill him.
Yeah. Burris, while he was state attorney general in 1992, Roland Cruz, Burris aggressively sought the death penalty for Rolando Cruz, who twice was convicted of raping and murdering a 10-year-old girl in Chicago suburb of Naperville. The crime took place in 83. But by 1992, another man had confessed to the crime, and Burris's own deputy attorney general was pleading with Burris to drop the case, which was then on appeal before the Illinois Supreme Court. Burris refused because he was running for governor. The executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions, Rob Warden, said, quote, anybody who understood this case wouldn't have voted for Burris, end quote. Indeed, Burris lost the race in two other attempts to become governor. Burris's role in the Rolando Cruz case was, quote, indefensible and in defiance of common sense and common decency. There was obvious evidence that Rolando Cruz was innocent, end quote, said Rob Warden. The deputy attorney general, agreed, that would be Roland Burris's deputy, agreed with that assessment and resigned rather than continue to prosecute Cruz. That would be the deputy attorney general was Mary Kenny. Once Roland Burris assigned Kenny to the case in 1991, she became convinced that Cruz was innocent, a victim of what she believed was prosecutorial misconduct. She sent Burris a memo reporting that the jury convicted Cruz without knowing that Brian Dugan, a repeated sex offender and murderer, had confessed to the crime. Burris never met with his own assistant, Kenny, to discuss a new trial for Cruz. Kenny, now an assistant public guardian in Cook County, said in an interview, quote, this is something the attorney general should have been concerned about. I knew the prosecutor's job was not merely to secure conviction, but to ensure justice was done, end quote. Anyway, Ms. Kenny was not alone in her beliefs. Prior to Cruz's 1985 trial, the lead detective in the case resigned in protest over prosecutors' handling of the case, according to news reports at the time. And rather than argue Burris's case before the state Supreme Court, Ms. Kenny also resigned. Anyway, in 1995, and we got to Chicago in 1997, right? In 1995, Cruz finally walked free after serving 11 years on death row for a crime he did not commit. A grand jury later indicted four sheriff's deputies and three former county prosecutors for their roles in the Cruz case. They were indicted. They were eventually acquitted. Burris was never accused of any wrongdoing or misconduct. Dugan is, what's the date on this? Dugan is scheduled to, or was scheduled to stand trial, or is scheduled to stand trial for the crime next year, 26 years after it was committed. Now, this comes from the website ProPublica, an independent nonprofit newsroom that produces investigative journalism in the public interest. Oh, and by the way, state prosecutors carried on with the prosecution of Rolando Cruz even after DNA evidence in 1995 excluded Cruz as the victim's rapist and linked Brian Dugan to the crime. At that point, Roland Burris refused to back off. All right, so screw Roland Burris. Go away, Roland Burris. But the truth is, I'm sure the Democrats in the U.S. Senate are going to seat him. See, this is the reason. This is why I believe in the theory of evolution and the scientific method, because no matter how right you think you are, then something pops up that you hadn't investigated before and you realize how wrong you were, so you adjust. That's why the scientific method makes so much sense and religious nonsense does not. Huh? What? You're saying, how could I possibly make that kind of a link? Well, you know better than that. Thanks to the person who sent that in. JH? Is it JH? Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. I had no idea that Roland Burris was the Attorney General during the Rolando Cruz prosecution. We had Rolando Cruz in our studio, what, twice? Three times? Got to know him. I used to meet him for lunch. And as a matter of fact, there were three cases on death row in Illinois, three people that we got involved with. One guy had been driven totally insane. Remember him? A guy came in the studio also, and our listeners raised some money for him. It was horrible, horrible. And Patterson was the third, yeah. Hey, listen, I'll see you Monday. All right, take care. Have a good weekend. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.